Good morning. I am Catherine, and it is very good to be here with you today. If I had brought my almost four-year-old, I would be sending her out. I used to be a proponent of having children stay in worship service, and then my child started coming up and putting her hand over my mouth and telling me to stop talking. And as that was my job, it didn't go very well. It is good to be here with you today. I have only been here for presbytery meetings, and so it is good to worship with you in your context, not the one brought into your midst. So we have three scriptures today, and I want to give you a heads up that I will be changing two words into better translations. You'll be able to see on the screen which ones I will change. And they're pretty significant changes in meaning. And then also, in the first text we read, I'm about to read them out of order. In the first text we read in Hosea, names are given, and the meaning of the name is important. And so after I say the name, I'm just going to say which means, and then what the translation is, so we have a better understanding. And then we will move forth from there. And I'm not used to being at big churches, and so I don't have a PowerPoint presentation for you today. If I did, it probably would be like one of the most recent ones I did that involved montages of jelly beans. So you're welcome. I do things a little differently, you can tell. So let us listen for the word of the Lord as brought to us today from the prophet Hosea. Have you been going through Amos the last few weeks? No? Okay. So we're going through the series of prophet readings in the lectionary, and they're all a little weird. They're all a little off, and that is kind of the role of the prophets. Prophets are messengers. They are speakers of truth. Speakers, especially of truth to power. So not necessarily telling what the future will hold, but telling you what God is saying, especially to like kings and other such high people of standing. So here we have the beginning of Hosea. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go, take for yourself a wife of promiscuity, and have children of promiscuity, for the land commits great promiscuity by forsaking the Lord." So he went and took Gomer, daughter of Dibilium, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, "Name him Jezreel," which means "God sows." For in a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. On that day, I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. She conceived again and bore a daughter. Then the Lord said to him, "Name her Loruhamah," which means "not pitied," for I will no longer have pity on the house of Israel or forgive them. But I will have pity on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow or by sword or by war or by horses or by horsemen. When she had weaned Loruhamah, she conceived and bore a son. Then the Lord said, "Name him Lo-Ami," which means "not my people, for you are not my people, and I am not your God." The prophets are not light and fluffy. Our second text for this morning is Psalm 138. It is a different tone. "I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods, I sing your praise. I bow down toward your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your steadfast love and your faithfulness. For you have exalted your name and your word above everything. On the day I called, you answered me. You increased my strength of soul. All the kings of the earth shall praise you, O Lord, for they have heard the words of your mouth. They shall sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. For the Lord, though the Lord is high, he regards the lowly, but the haughty he perceives from far away. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve me against the wrath of my enemies. You stretch out your hand, and your right hand delivers me. The Lord will fulfill his purpose for me. Your steadfast love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the work of your hands. Our gospel reading for today is from Luke. Part of it you will definitely recognize from something we say all the time. And then we heard in the time with children today some of part of the rest of it. Spoiler, I will be changing the word persistence to shamelessness. Jesus was praying in a certain place, and after he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray as John taught his disciples." Don't you want to know what John taught? He said to them, "When you pray, say, 'Father, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. Give us each day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we ourselves forgive everyone indebted to us. And do not bring us to the time of trial.'" And Jesus said to them, "Suppose one of you has a friend, and you go to him at midnight and say to him, 'Friend, lend me 3 loaves of bread, for a friend of mine has arrived, and I have nothing to set before him.' And he answers from within, 'Do not bother me. The door has already been locked, and my children are with me in bed. I cannot give up and give you anything. I tell you, even though he will not get up and give him anything because he is his friend, at least because of his shamelessness, he will get up and give him whatever he needs. So I say to you, ask and it will be given to you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and everyone who searches finds. And for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. Is there anyone among you who, if your child asks for a fish, will give a snake instead of a fish? Or if the child asks for an egg, will give a scorpion?" The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Our texts today are about relationship with God and God's relationship with people displayed with human examples. So both in Hosea and in the gospel, we have parables, a loose term you could say for it, stories of what we are to be. And there are definite problems with the text that I won't deal with, but I will mention briefly to honor them. In Hosea, there is a really big problem with the concept of ownership, ownership in marriage specifically, and there are a lot of shame dynamics that I personally am not comfortable with. She is unfaithful to Hosea, and she should be shamed for that. Lots of conversations around that. In Luke, I am uncomfortable with the topic of needing to bug God into doing something, like a toddler that I live with. And that kind of needing to harass God in order to get a response is honestly not consistent with the steadfast love and attentiveness that we attribute to God in our theology. There is a way of falling into a petty kind of relationship with God that is something we associate with other theologies, other religions. I grew up with a lot of Greek mythologies, and you have to appease a lot of the gods and goddesses, and that's not in our theology. So we start with Hosea. It is a lot about fidelity and loyalty, even when someone else is turning elsewhere. And of course, this marriage is a symbolic representation of God being faithful to God's people and them not being faithful back, just like Hosea is supposedly faithful to his wife and she is not faithful back. I think it is a significant change that she isn't doing things for money, but for fun. It brings a different aura to the whole concept of who he is supposed to marry. But it is definitely an unequal relationship in power and in fidelity. And so it, in certain ways, is like a covenantal relationship, like we see in God's covenants with us and other covenants at the time. It is a more powerful party making a promise to a lower influence party. And in our relationship with God, there's nothing that we can do to invalidate that covenant. There's nothing we can do to invalidate that love. In Luke, we have, as we recognize, the Lord's Prayer, at least part of the Lord's Prayer. You can see where they've added the flourishes over the generations since. And it deals with the most basic things in life, our daily bread, to the most divine things, thy kingdom come. And it deals with simplicity in profound relationship. The part on sin and forgiveness, I think, is even stronger language than what we say every week. It's more like, no, you're doing it, as opposed to, let me do it. It's more of a statement than kind of wishful thinking like we have phrased it. And then after this, we have the parable, which is about hospitality for another. And then what do you do when you're not at all prepared as the person should have been? I've heard you're talking about hospitality this summer, so got that memo. And it is shameless what this man does when he goes to ask his neighbor for some bread. At midnight, no, go away. You should already have that in your house. Why do you have house guests coming and you're not prepared for them? But there is this shameless persistence in relationship that we have here. It's not so much that there is a kind of harassment element going on. It's that there is an unself-conscious element to this person who comes and asks. So, you know what? I'm not going to worry about if you're going to be mad at me. I'm not going to worry about the possible effects of what's going to happen. I'm just going to go because maybe I trust the situation. Maybe I feel so confident in the situation, in my friend, that I'm just going to go forth and I'm going to go do it. I studied in Spain for a while in college, and my host mother would call everyone on TV and such, she would call them all sinvergüenzas, which means without embarrassment. And it was a really fun insult. Nobody else apparently uses it. But they just, without embarrassment. Oh my goodness, the gall of you doing that. How dare you? She didn't call that to me, but she probably should have at one point or another. And then we have the psalm, which is like the calm mediator of these texts. It shows our standing as humans, as believers, in relationship with God. It shows the complete devotion by a human towards God that is what is lacking in Hosea. And it brings forth the shameless devotion as it is discussed in Luke. The Psalms usually bring everything together. So what do we do? What do we do with these texts? How are we called upon to respond? They don't exist without our responding to them. Well, they teach us a lot about loyalty, a lot about what it means to commit, and what it means to be in a deeply loving relationship. The internet is interesting in many ways, and I'm a really big introvert, I know, and it's hard for me to make friends. and it's hard for me to trust. And I've moved around a lot in my life, and so it's always interesting to see who I trust and who I will be loyal to. Well, last November, I started this support group because, you know, I wanted to be accountable for eating right and losing weight, as we do. And so I invited a couple of groups of the clergy women that I know if they wanted to be part of the support group. And about 25 people are in the group, and it has almost nothing to do with eating or exercising, but it has almost instantaneously become the safest place where any of us can come and bare our souls. We can talk about the fact we forgot to clean the house today, or we can talk about the fact that we just had a miscarriage. We can talk about whatever we need to. And for me, it is a brand new way of being shameless and loyal with a group of people. For the record, I've only met two of them in person. But it teaches me about community in this particular online fashion, but also how to be community outside in our world. I live in Janesville. My community is different than your community. And you have your own influences here and outside, be it the person at the checkout line, be it the kind of interactions you have at school or work or whatever clubs you're a part of. And, you know, there's all these gimmicks. If you ever want to grow your church, I don't know. There's all these gimmicks to try and grow your church. I think that the best way to grow your church is for you to be so excited about what's happening here that you tell people in the grocery line about it because you're just like, we have this thing coming up and you should come. I think it would be great. Your excitement is what is infectious to others. Living in community, loving and caring in community, ideally what happens in this hour will go out elsewhere. It is about being shameless to each other and shameless to God. Sorry, God already knows, so there's no point in having shame with God. Brené Brown defines shame as fearing that you are unworthy of connection and community. God will not let you get away with that. God does not shame you. Here at Crossroads, I've been wondering what you might do. I have very limited knowledge of who you are and what you're doing, but I have read your bulletin announcements. I got all that information at first, and congratulations, you are getting a new head of staff and an upcoming associate. I know you have been without for a very long time, and that is hard. You've had a lot that you've had to do to pick up the slack for not having these professional roles with you. And I think that there is going to be a lot of relief from having to do all the tasks and taking on the responsibilities that you have been doing. But also having those things taken away from you can be a really hard thing once you've gotten used to them. I was in a conversation with the church. It was an interview. And the person said, well, we want to bring, I think he was in his 70s for reference. He said, we want to bring the younger people into the relationship or into the leadership of the church because we've been doing this flat out for a really long time and we're really tired and we really want the young people to step up and start leading. And I developed enough of a rapport with this particular man to say, can you share? And he wasn't sure how to answer that question. It seems really nice to say, I want someone else to come in and to take on these things that make me tired. But if you can't actually give up those things, we got some problems. I think you would have been able to, but that was my guess. And I wonder, will you wake up God in the middle of the night begging for good things for your new pastor? I don't know what that means. What that would mean in your context. But will you be that shameless about welcoming and caring for and allowing your new pastor to do what she will do? And then we look at the psalm, and I wonder, will you walk beside your new pastoral staff trusting each other, because none of this is really about us, but it's about loving God and taking care of all of God's creation found in the world around us, in everything and in everyone we meet. Will you walk beside shamelessly, lifting up others for the glory of God? And it's not about which one of you is going to be promiscuous or which one of you is going to be really interested in having power, really interested in having and keeping that influence that you've had for a long time. I don't know who you are, so I can say this. I'm not looking at anybody specifically. It's the privilege of a guest preacher. Which one of you is going to be really concerned with having control, and which one of you is really accustomed to providing the distractions that maybe take things off course? All those things are human nature. All those things are understandable. But it's about living simply and profoundly as our prayer, our Lord's Prayer, teaches us to do. Help me get by with just what I need, and help me be in good relationship, in a righteous, right relationship with others. That's what righteousness means, being in right relationship with others. We have today a baptism, and there are many glorious ways to describe baptism. But the way that I find most meaningful to me is that it is a time when we can adopt new brothers and sisters into the family, and we promise to help take care of them and raise them. So today you'll be making that promise for one particular tiny little cute person, but you have made that promise to every other one of your brothers and sisters. This is one of the ways that we as Christians commit in this relationship, and we fight those distractions. You are welcoming a new sister into your family today. Will your head of staff be your sister as Jesus is your brother through baptism? And I wonder, how will you live into God's commitment to you? It is about relationship, dear ones. It is about God's never-ending love for us and our efforts to have good relationships with ourselves, with others, and most importantly, with God. When we turn back to the scriptures, we find the good and the bad examples of how to do that. Dear ones, be shameless in how you engage with God and with each other. You are worthy of connection. That is the best thing that you can do, to connect, to love, to devote yourself to God and to others. And you're having a new person and hopefully soon new people coming in. And it's going to be hard, and it's going to be okay. Don't fight it. Go with it. Don't give her a snake. Give her a fish. She's not a child, but it still works. Go forth knowing how deeply you are loved and how deeply you hold the capacity for loving others. It is what we are called to do. And I now have the privilege of welcoming in a new one, a new tiny itty-bitty child who is still forming who she is going to be. And you can help her do that. You can give her the good things. And I highly recommend that you do. It's time. Would everybody who's involved in the baptism come on up front, please?